It is also noticeable that people from a wide variety of cultures find very similar descriptions for this state and that identical experiences even occur across cultures. The most common images and experiences reported when the soul leaves the body are: the affected people describe a tunnel through which they move towards a bright light. The affected people see their body lying on the bed and floating as if under the ceiling. From there they see and hear all the details or conversations that take place during this time, and they can later, when they are conscious again, recount them in great detail. They find themselves in bright light, where they meet people who have already died, who often send them back to life. They see their life pass before their eyes and understand what has gone wrong so far and what they absolutely have to change and do. It is not uncommon for people who have had near-death experiences to experience change a lot in their personality after they awaken. It is not just nerve cells that are going crazy, but existential experiences that leave their mark on people. Ultimately, these people have made a decision and come back to life to do something. Sometimes it also makes sense for them to tell other people about their experiences in order to make the existence of the spiritual plane more widely known and thus take away people's fear of death. In any case, this phenomenon shows that there are more things between heaven and earth than some people can perceive, and that each soul decides for itself when it comes and when it leaves. 7. Personal experiences. Touching encounters. In this chapter, I would like to give you an insight into the experiences that I have had so far as a medium during my work. I have been able to accompany and support many people, and I would like to share with you some moments that were very touching for me. Whenever I think back to these situations, I feel the comfort that continues to come from them for me. All encounters are very special in their own way, but of course there are some that have had a longer lasting effect on me than others. One situation that still touches me deeply today was a session with a family that had lost their little boy. They already had another child, but they had not come to terms with the death of this little person. So we began the session and I told him how I perceived the little boy. I described the boy's typical behavior. The parents recognized their son, but the conversation was mostly between me and the father. The mother was quite quiet and passive the whole time. It was the father who asked the questions. The son did his best to prove to the parents that his soul, with all the knowledge he had of his earthly life, still existed. He told me about his grave, his peculiarities, and what was currently going on at home with his parents and grandparents. He wanted to show that he visited her often. At some point, the session finally came to an end and we stood up to say goodbye. I had a strong urge to hug the mother goodbye. She was practically waiting for my offer, and when I held her tightly in my arms she suddenly burst out and I had to catch her. Her knees went weak and all her inner walls collapsed. She let me hold her and cried uncontrollably. I was happy and relieved that she allowed it, because I knew that she would have to let her feelings run free at some point in order to one day overcome her grief. It was a situation without words, and I was apparently the first person since the death of her child that she could impose the full extent of her pain on. I am still in contact with these lovely people today, and I now know that holding on gave the woman more than words ever could have. In moments like these, I am glad that my personal faith and knowledge give me so much strength, because it means I can be there for people when they need it. One of the things I particularly like about my job is its diversity. There are so many reasons why people come to me that I can't imagine it ever getting boring. The sessions and the solutions that develop there are as varied and exciting as the people. For example, it is more common for women to come to me who are pregnant and want information about their unborn child. This is a very nice aspect of my work, because it helps women to strengthen their relationship with the child while it is still in the womb and to deal with any fears before the birth. I experienced an unusual situation when a couple came to me. The woman was about 6 months pregnant. When I asked her how I could help her, she told me that she had found out that her baby had a heart defect and that she was now having to make serious medical decisions a few months before the birth, namely to sign a document stating what should happen to the child immediately after birth. The difficult thing about the situation was that the family did not feel that the doctor's plans were good for the baby. They felt pressured and unsettled because they had been told that the child had to be delivered by cesarean section because it was too weak to be born. The mother, however, felt differently about her child and wanted to speak to the child's soul through me. For me personally, it is the same whether I am with a soul whose body is not yet in the world, or one that has already left its body. A soul is a soul. I could feel the child's personality very clearly and noticed such strength and serenity in it that it impressed me greatly. My perception coincided with the mother's feelings about her child, and so the unborn child had its say in this way. The child's parents both took the view that they wanted to give the child the chance to come into the world naturally and without a cesarean section. They felt that their child was strong enough, and the unborn child confirmed exactly that. The most important thing was to support the parents in the decision they had already made, because they had already played through countless times in their minds which scenario would make them more guilty later. Either bring the child into the world on a certain date and have it operated on immediately, with a chance of survival of around 50%, or let the child decide when it wanted to be born, welcome it first and then have it operated on. Whichever option was chosen, it was not even possible to predict whether the heart defect would heal to a large extent and thus no longer be so life-threatening. It was really a difficult situation. But the parents ultimately agreed to welcome the child calmly first and trust their instincts. We played through which scenario would make them think, if only we had. And it quickly became clear that they did not want to make any hasty decisions. So they waited for the next few months, and the heart defect did indeed become less serious. The mother gave birth naturally, and only then, after extensive examinations, was a targeted heart operation performed. The boy developed splendidly, and the couple were incredibly happy that they had listened to their instincts. The difficult thing about such situations is that parents have to consciously take responsibility for all eventualities, and many are afraid of that. But experience has shown time and again that you blame yourself the most if you don't listen to your instincts. Assuming you feel your feelings as clearly as these two people do, you have to assert yourself, sometimes even listen to accusations, and sometimes you are completely alone with your opinion. Who else, if not the responsible parents, is in a position to make decisions for their own child? After all, they are the ones who ultimately have to bear the consequences of their decision. Even if they follow the advice of others that did not correspond to their own feelings. I am just happy that I was able to lend my voice to the little man, so that his needs and strengths could be taken into account in the parent's decision before the birth. A photo of him still adorns my office today, and I am happy every time I look at it. From this very young person, I would now like to move on to an old person who really impressed me. It was an old but very cheerful and mentally alert woman whom I first met when she attended one of my seminars. She was very funny and we immediately hit it off. We had regular contact over the next few years, and at 80 years old she called herself my officially oldest fan. She spoke very openly about her own death and how she imagined the afterlife. She had this natural attitude to death, but constantly suffered from pain in her legs and had problems walking. I was always a little surprised by this, as it seemed as if she was at peace with herself and her loved ones. But whenever I tried to ask and wanted to know more, she assured me that she had sorted everything out for herself and was looking forward to death. A few years later, she was getting worse and the cancer in her body was taking over. After medical treatment, she was admitted to a hospice and gave up her apartment because she thought she only had a few more weeks to live. I had a different feeling. She wrote to me now and then and we spoke on the phone every now and then. Whenever I heard her voice, I could clearly feel how firmly she was still connected to life, even though other people she knew always told me that the old lady would soon see the light tunnel and that she would surely die soon. When we spoke on the phone again, she asked me why she couldn't die when she had prepared everything. I told her how her words affected me. It wasn't enough to look forward to death. You had to also be finished with his tasks here on Earth. I just had the feeling that there were still things for her to sort out, but she didn't want to hear anything about it. She had made up her mind that death would fit in perfectly with her plan right now, because she was ill after all. She never once considered that she could try to get well and put her strength into this process. In the course of our conversation, issues that she was very unhappy about came to the surface. She had a precise idea of her burial and memorial service. Her only son saw things differently, however, and made no secret of the fact that he did not like her ideas. He would do it the way he thought was right when the time came, he told her that straight out. If you knew her as a person, you knew how important this funeral was to her as a farewell party. But on the other hand, she did not have the courage to assert herself with her son. This disregard for her wishes was waiting for clarification with her son, but she continued to avoid confrontation with him. And so this suppressed frustration and pain had to find a way to express itself through her body. Her pain became more and more severe, but her mind was surprisingly still clear despite the morphine. She really had the opportunity to clarify things right up until the end. During another conversation, I asked her if she had already expressed a wish as to who should pick her up when she died. I told her that her deceased husband would certainly be there if she wanted him to. She answered very aggressively and said, "No, absolutely not. I never want to meet him again. I'm far too afraid of that. He hurt me far too much." I was extremely surprised by this reaction. I realized why she had never mentioned this chapter of her life before. So there was the next unresolved relationship. After I had this information, it really wasn't surprising to me that she had such a hard time dealing with death. On the one hand, the son who ignored and disregarded her last wishes, and on the other hand, the fear of meeting her deceased husband. These are actually pretty unfavorable conditions for leaving this world in peace. At some point I received the news that she had finally died. I contacted her and wanted to know how she was doing now. She was still quite stubborn and did not want to look in the mirror, which would show her that she had hid it in her own hands. But as I write these lines, I feel that she has calmed down. She has now realized that she was trying to avoid conflicts and that her body was resolving these conflicts for her in the form of pain. She has reconciled herself with God and is now finally in the state she so longed for. In any case, I will always carry her in my heart because she was an enrichment for people. This story shows that it is not enough to organize everything related to death and dying, to distribute the furniture and clear out the apartment so that the bereaved no longer have to deal with it. You also have to clear up your psyche and express what is burning in your soul through words or meaningful actions. Then nothing stands in the way of a peaceful death. I am constantly learning from the people who come to me, and just as each person is individual with their own story, new situations await me again and again that I have to master. A session I attended also made a big impression when a woman came to me with her adult daughter. We sat down and I asked what I could do for her. The woman said bluntly in a very aggressive tone, "I want to speak to my husband. He should finally say how he imagines I should cope in the future." Her words were full of accusations, and she made no effort to hide this in any way. The daughter was visibly uncomfortable after this introduction, but didn't say anything. I felt the deceased behind me and the first thing I asked him in my mind was whether he had committed suicide. Because then I could at least understand the woman's anger, even if the tone was quite inappropriate. The deceased said no and explained to me that he had died suddenly of a heart attack and that he had no desire to speak to his wife under these circumstances. I could understand his reaction only too well. But now I had the honorable task of making it clear to this woman that her husband did not want to speak to her in this tone and that he would not speak to her again. She was ranting like a madman, and I let her finish ranting. Maybe, I had the faint hope, it would make her feel a little better, because anger is often part of the grieving process and it helps when you let it out. She said things like, "Typical, just like when she was alive, coward. and it quickly became clear that she was really just insulting her husband and blaming someone for her own frustration. Her daughter started to calm her down and tried to get her to calm down. At some point she actually did calm down, but not because she had now realized that her tone made communication with her deceased husband impossible, but because she was now really insulted and therefore didn't say a word. I conducted the rest of the conversation with the daughter and tried to at least tell her a few helpful things about her father in this awkward and tense atmosphere. Because with her I had the feeling that she was actually grieving for her father, which may also have been the case with her wife, but unfortunately it was not noticeable in any way. After this session I could now well imagine what it was like when the husband was alive and the couple were at loggerheads. This story is a good example of how the deceased also have free will and use it. If for some reason they do not want to contact their relatives, then the medium or the bereaved cannot force this. So I am constantly challenged to deal with new situations, but mastering these situations allows me to grow more and more trust and security. A completely different kind of challenge awaited me when I held an event with around 20 people. I made brief contact with a deceased person for each person and passed on the most important information. Such events were always very nice and that is why they were very popular with people. There was a good atmosphere that evening too, and the first third went quite normally. Then I turned to a woman whose father had died. This father had been a strict Catholic during his lifetime, and his faith had always given him and his daughter material for heated discussions, as she thought more spiritually and was oriented in that direction. Now I sensed this father without knowing the story of the two of them, and he began to tell how he had experienced his death. He described how he now saw what he had believed in during his lifetime. Since he had been in the spiritual world, he had gained a lot of insight into his faith and now saw some things differently. This topic was very important to his daughter, and she was happy that he had spoken out about it. I pointed out several times that I was only passing on what he said and that it had nothing to do with my personal view of the Catholic Church. This was also understood correctly by all participants, except for one. We were all the more astonished when this one participant suddenly burst out and started to insult me out of the blue. It would be the last thing I would do to deceive people and abuse their grief to get money out of their pockets, etc., etc., which, by the way, was really far-fetched considering the entrance fee was €20 for 4 hours. I watched this scene and the strange thing was that his accusations didn't annoy me at all. I gave him some time to get everything off his chest and then asked him if he was finished because I would now like to say something. I reminded him that everyone sitting in this room was there voluntarily and if he didn't like it he could leave at any time. Otherwise I would expect him to hold back out of respect for the others or to avoid such events in the future. I sensed that his real anger had only been triggered by me, but that I was not the cause of his outburst. He said that he would not leave the room under any circumstances. If I wanted him to leave, I would have to get 2 police officers to take him away. The other participants became restless and began to ask the man, more or less politely, to leave now. Because unlike him, they were interested in what I had to say. He enjoyed this complete attention and said, "I'm staying here now, and then Mrs. Jen should contact my mother. Then we'll see whether she can or not." Before the other participants could attack the man, I asked my spiritual helper for strength and support, and then everything happened very quickly. I forbade him to use that tone. To speak to me and had a vote on who was in favor of the man leaving the event. The result was devastating, and I no longer asked him to leave, but told him that he had to do it now. Suddenly he jumped up, ran towards the door. I pressed the €20 he had already paid into his hand and wished him a good evening. The woman who had brought him to the evening apologized for his behavior. She had never seen him like this before. The dynamic that had ultimately built up against him had probably become too strong for him. My spiritual helper had also played his part, and so we were able to continue the evening without further incidents. It was very impressive to me that someone had insulted me, But it had not reached me at all, it had simply bounced off me. I was able to set boundaries without becoming as rude as he was. I had not lost my respect and admiration for him as a person, and had not let myself be won over by his power play. And that gave me a feeling of freedom and strength that I hadn't even been aware of before this experience. I was rewarded by realizing through this experience that the last few years of work on myself were now bearing fruit. That evening I included this man in my prayers because I thought that if you're so angry, you must also be very sad. And that's why it couldn't hurt to send him a few nice and bright thoughts. In order to gain confidence in your perceptions, experiences of any kind are worth their weight in gold because each one shows you how the spiritual world works. The most important thing is to realize that it's not the perception that's wrong, but what you sometimes make of it. A good example of this is an encounter I had with a woman who wanted to contact her deceased partner. Half an hour before she came to me, I sensed a younger, deceased man in the room who was so excited as if he was about to have his first date. I didn't yet associate him with this woman because I didn't know why she was actually coming to me. When she arrived and we started the session, I quickly realized that this man really was hers. When I asked him why he had been the half an hour earlier, he said that he definitely didn't want to be late. This meeting with his great love was far too important to him. She said that this was typical of him when something was really important to him. Then we talked about how he had died and what he had felt about it. I asked him if he had been ill, but he said no. I asked if it had been an accident or perhaps even suicide, and he said no to the two. Now I was a bit at a loss because I didn't have many ideas about how else someone could die. I asked my spiritual helper, and he told me that it had been some kind of accident, but not like I had known it before. His exact way of expressing himself was like in school, "We haven't had that yet." I told him that he should send me an image that I could use to describe the special nature of the accident, and the following came to me. I saw two brothers in a red sports car with an open roof driving quickly through a landscape like the Eiffel, with the older brother driving. So I asked myself what this image reminded me of personally. Because you have to know that the deceased can only work with the pool of information that was stored in the medium's brain at some point. If the medium does not know the taste of a strawberry from their own experience, for example, then the deceased cannot use this experience for their communication. So I summarized, two brothers who like to drive fast, with the older brother driving faster in the red car. And the connection to the Eiffel was there. I was completely confused, but I described this summary of my image to her. The woman smiled and seemed to be able to do something with my description. She explained to me that her boyfriend had died for unknown reasons during a Formula 3 test drive. He was completely alone on the track when the car suddenly broke away and he lost control of the car at high speed. He was able to describe the dilemma he had experienced in the car to me in detail, and he also had a technical explanation for the defect, which had so far been missing despite an official police investigation. Everything made sense. And when the woman mentioned the word racetrack, I suddenly understood the connection between my picture and the type of accident. It was like scales fell from my eyes. The symbol with the two brothers was a reference to automotorsport. And that would have been a surprise to me as a diehard Schumacher fan. And Formula One fan should have noticed immediately. The brothers stood for the Schumacher brothers, the red car for Ferrari, and they come from the Eiffel region. And the older one is really the faster of the two. I could hardly have gotten more references to racing in one picture, but that's what happens when you can't see the forest for the trees. Despite that one moment when I was on the line, it was a very nice session, and all the unsaid things between the lovers were able to be expressed. Because of the sudden death, which the woman had witnessed from the stands, there had been no opportunity for her to say goodbye to her lover. The session at least allowed them to do it in words and make up for a farewell. Now at least she knew what exactly had happened that day and how he was doing in the afterlife. Something that always amazes me is how much suffering some people can endure. A very touching example of this is a woman who came to me because she wanted to contact several deceased people. This is actually nothing unusual, as people often come to me with questions for several deceased people. But in this case there was a tragic peculiarity. All of those she sought contact with had died on the same day. They were people close to her who were returning with her from a holiday in the mountains. They had rented a minibus and had driven home together. The return journey had originally been planned for the previous day, but somehow the departure had been delayed until the following day. The woman with whom I had the session was very unhappy with this development, because she was the only one who had the inexplicable urge to leave the day before as planned. On the actual day of the return journey, she was very restless and kept urging everyone to hurry. On the way home, they got caught in a traffic jam in which nothing could go forward or back. She was very upset inside and wished they were home already. A few minutes later, she knew why she had felt that way. A truck had come shooting up from behind, failed to see the traffic jam, lost control of its lorry and sped into the cars without braking. The minibus was also hit and mostly destroyed. When the woman came to, she looked around the vehicle and saw that everyone except her was dead or very seriously injured. Her boyfriend, who had been driving the car, died instantly. Her little daughter, who was sitting behind the driver, had not survived the impact either. Her friend's son, who was seriously injured, had not had a chance either. She had lost three people in one fell swoop. The dog, which had also been with her, had also disappeared. She herself had not suffered any serious injuries, but was still treated by a doctor. She had sensed the approaching disaster, but could not have prevented it. I was incredibly impressed by how calmly she talked about the accident when we had finished the session. I had tried to describe to her how each person had experienced their death, because the woman's worst concern was that the victims had suffered a lot of pain. But because everything had happened so quickly, I was able to reassure her about that. The grief over her child was of course the worst thing for her, but the deceased daughter did her best to explain to her mother why she had died that day. The mother was very sensitive and fortunately could perceive her daughter very well, which of course helped her a lot to cope with her grief. She decided to make something good out of this devastating accident. So she drove back to the scene of the accident and collected signatures there. This road was already known for its traffic jams on the way back and for being dangerous. There had been fatal accidents there in the past, but nothing significant had been done to make this stretch of road safer. The woman collected signatures for the route to be made safer and changed, and was even successful. So all these people had not died in vain, and that helped her to accept this sad chapter of her life a little more. When she was there again for the petition, she happened to get into conversation with a local resident. He did not know that she was one of the people who had survived an accident there, and he told her about a bad collision between a truck and the cars stuck in a traffic jam. It was exactly the event that had taken her daughter and friends away from her. But the man did not know that yet. Then he said that he had seen a lost child that day. "I found a lost dog whose owner has not come forward to this day." She asked what the dog looked like and hey presto, it was her dog that had been lost in all the chaos. Who would have thought that at least a small part of the story would have a happy ending? I saw this retrieval of the dog as a glimmer of hope despite all the tragedy of this sad event. I often think of this woman and her story. I am still impressed by the bravery with which she faced her challenges. As happened to this woman, many people do not have time to say goodbye to their loved ones in peace. They are suddenly faced with a fait accompli and must first understand and comprehend what has happened. Others have more time but still suppress the fact that their loved one will die in the foreseeable future. Even so, a conscious farewell cannot take place. In the case of a young family, I was fortunately able to help the mother to deal very consciously with the impending death of her husband and everyone to experience the farewell very consciously. This was very important for the family, because it meant that everyone could resume their own lives relatively quickly after the husband's death, and none of them were left in a state of shock. The unusual thing about it was that the wife did not come to see me in person, but that we had all the discussions about this end-of-life care by phone or email, because she lived far away from me and did not know exactly when her husband would die. She could not leave, especially as there were two small children to look after. Her husband, the father of her children, suddenly fell ill and collapsed into a coma.